So this evening, I want to look at grasping and its other side, creative engagement. And so in Finnish, how would you say grasping? Okay, thank you. And to me, this is when we do the meditation, it's actually helping us at that point, what I would call the point of contact. And so we have the six senses. We hear, we smell, we taste, we have physical sensation, we have thought, we see things. And so through the senses, we come in contact. We come in contact with what we hear, what we see, what we taste, what we smell, the sensation, and the thought. And at that point of contact, in a way, I feel the meditation gives us a choice. Do we grasp or do we creatively engage? Is contact clear? How would you say in Finnish?
Contact.
Contact, so it's the same word. So, and so, in a way, the awareness, like the mindfulness, awareness, paying attention in the moment, in the present, in what is happening, is so that we become more aware of the point of contact. And then to see that often there is contact and then often we react very fast, automatically. And then through the meditation process, then actually instead of upon contact grasping, then upon contact we could creatively engage. And so first, I like to look at the process of grasping, how it works, and then how could be the process of creative engagement. So I will just kind of show you, give you an example. It will be maybe a little clearer. So let's see, this is precious to me. Maybe it's gold or diamond, or it is the greatest truth in the universe. But whatever the case, because it's precious and because it is mine, then I hold on to it. And that's what grasping does. We hold on to something. And then if I grasp at this for any length of time, two things are going to happen. The first one, I'm going to get a cramp in the arm. And so to see that generally, when there is tension, this is a signal. Ah, I might be grasping. But then there is something which is much more problematic, difficult, is that if I do this, I cannot use my hand to do anything else. So I am stuck to what I am grasping at. And this is in a way the main problem of grasping. Is that as soon as I grasp, I stop myself from being able to do something else. So then, what is the solution? First solution, I could cut the hand. But that's a little drastic. That's a little too much. But some ascetic practice as how about that. Next thing I could do, I could get rid of the object. But the object is not saying, come, 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 you really want me. We have the impression it's doing that. I have no idea, I mean, how you are in front of certain shop window. But possibly if you see the iPhone 205, then you think, woo, and it's like there is a glow around the iPhone and it's saying you really want me. Or a book or whatever it might, you see, suddenly it's like, and this actually the advertisement industry really understand. They really understand grasping. They're really amazing. They really understand it. So they do lots of tricks because they know about that effect of glowing. I mean, when I do shopping for, with my mother for, to put in her fridge and in her, freezer. And once we went and I was looking at, you know, thing I could buy for her nice in the freezer. And so there was this nice box with this really nice, you know, kind of vegetable little pie. On the photo, it looked fantastic. And I thought, yeah, I can buy, we can buy this for my mother. And then one day we opened it and it really was not like the photo. So I think getting rid of the object is not the solution. But I think the solution, and I think it's what we are doing when we meditate, the solution is to open the hand. The solution is to ungrasp. So the thing can still be there, but there can be movement. There can be freedom. So we're not trying to get rid of the hand or to get rid of the object. But we're trying to de-grasp. We're trying to open our hand. So how does it work, this grasping? Because I think this is very important. So grasping, generally with grasping, immediately you have identification. As soon as you grasp, you identify. I, me, mine. This is, it comes together. Then you limit yourself, you solidify around what you grasp at, you limit yourself to it, and then you amplify. This is one of the main difficulty with grasping, is that it makes us magnify, amplify. And in both ways, amplify positively, amplify negatively. And then once we have amplified, it's very hard to creatively engage because the thing is much bigger than actually the experience. But we are caught in the magnification and not seeing what is really the condition. And so when we grasp, you have these two sidelines which happen. One I mentioned already is what I call proliferation. You just proliferate. You go more and more into abstraction, away from the thing itself. So let me give you an example. So we have this very nice belt here. You know, and I travel around the world and I teach and I have all kind of belts. And some are a little difficult to make a nice sound out of, and then some have a very nice sound. And this one is a very nice one. We are very lucky. It does not go tuk tuk or truck truck or whatever. It's very nice. So, I have this bell, I make a nice sound, and then, I like this bell. How could I get a bell like this? I mean, I could try to steal it, but that's really not so much on. So, we put this aside. Oh, where could I get it? I mean, is there a shop near where I live? Or do I have to go there? Or do I have to do this? And then I think about getting a similar bell. It doesn't mean I cannot get one, but it means that I am not with the beauty of the bell anymore. I am somewhere else. I go in abstraction. Another example of that, many years ago I was on a retreat in Massachusetts. And like here, they had beautiful birch tree. So I would go, and where I live you don't have a birch tree like that. And so I would go to walk and then I would commune with the birch tree. So I would be in the front of the birch tree and I would commune with the beauty, the straightness, the whiteness, the beauty of it. And then at some point, I would move to the grasping and think, wouldn't it be nice to have such a birch tree in my garden, and where can I get it, and can I really plant it, and how many years? And as soon as I do this, I am not with the beauty of the tree anymore. I have got into abstraction about it. And that's what I mean by proliferation. You go away from the experience to abstracting, thinking about it, but outside of the experience right now. And so I think this is a signal that when we encounter something, are we with the thing? Are we creatively engaging with the thing itself that we see, that we experience? Or do we start to grasp and then move into abstraction, to kind of thinking about it in many different ways? Another thing we can do is exaggeration. When we grasp, often we exaggerate. And so it makes, again, the thing bigger than it is. I'll give you an example. So I phone a friend and I say, how are you? And she said, life is terrible, everything is terrible, it's awful. So I said, but what happened? Nothing happened, it's always like this, it's always awful. So after 10 minutes, she said, oh yes, something happened yesterday, which was really painful. So once we went down from this is always like this, we went down to yes, yesterday something happened, we could creatively engage. But as long as she was, it's always like this, what can you do with always? You cannot do much. There is nothing you can do, because there is nothing concrete. When if you say, oh, yesterday this happened, there is something concrete. You can look at, what can I do about that? Not always. And what I think is important to see with grasping is that you grasp at something you want, or that you push away at something you don't want, you have exactly the same amplification. This is very important to see. And that's why often, yes, when you grasp at something you like, generally the problem is that you're going to amplify the wonderfulness of it. And the problem is that often the wonderfulness is impermanent. And so it cannot stay magnified very long. This is often what happens when you fall in love. I mean, there is this then, you know, sometimes it lasts a long time, but sometimes it doesn't last very long, and then you have to deal with the person instead of the magnified, wonderful, fantastic, whatever, whoever. But it's the same if you grasp negatively. And often you can recognize this, I hate this. I cannot stand this. I mean, recently I did it. It was a bit of a joke, but I was half serious. We were at a dinner with the family, all my family, and once a year we go to this restaurant, and I had lots of little desserts, and I tasted one, and I realized, ooh, this is rice pudding. And then I thought, rice pudding. Then somebody said, oh, I can take it. And she said, you don't like rice pudding. I said, I hate rice pudding. But I don't take it so personally. But it's interesting. We can magnify very quickly. I think it's that I was joking a little bit there, but I really have problems with rice pudding. But it's interesting to see, what do we do? We kind of like, we easily exaggerate either the goodness of something or either the badness of something. And then generally that can create tension. instead of creatively engaging, which was, yes, I do not like specially this, and she can have it. And I was very thankful that she wanted it. So to see. But often that's what happened. And that's why we have to be careful in meditation. That whatever we experience, that it be a thought, a feeling, a sensation, or whatever, and then we think, I must not have this thought. I must not have this feeling. And so you, as you see it, you try to stop it. You try to push it away because it's negative. But as soon as you do this, you're going to amplify. And then, that's why it doesn't mean that it's not that you let it run, but it's more, how can I creatively engage with that thought, with that feeling, with that sensation? And personally, I would say one of the ways to creatively engage is to, how does it feel? Because often we go into the story of it, the commenting of it, the association. And instead, creative engagement is, what is happening right now? If I have this negative thought, what is the shape of it? What are the languaging I am using? What is the tone? What is the story? If I am a difficult feeling, before I start to name it, sadness, anger, whatever, how does it feel in the body? If I have a sensation, how does it feel? Before I magnify it by grasping and identifying with it. So to see that it goes both ways. When we want something and when we push something away. So let's go through the different senses. Because through the sixth sense, the Buddhist had the thinking, then you, in a way you have, any given moment, you have six contacts. You hear something, you smell something, you taste something, and one sense might be more in the front. I mean, if you are eating food, the taste will be more there. If you go outside and you look at things, the visual will be more there. But since we were working with sounds today, let's start with sound. So we talked about sound, so I don't need to go more into that. But what kind of noise, what kind of sound there is, it's words. Words is something we come into contact with through the ears. So a word comes up, and we're in contact with it. And when we're in contact with words from other people, for example, what happens? Do we grasp, or do we creatively engage? Shall we do a little experiment? So I look at you very nicely. So I look at you, little smile, yes. And I say, you are all awakened. Martin said we're all awakened. Great. I can start to teach or whatever goes on. Or I look at you, little serious, a little not smiling, and I say, well, you are stupid. She says I'm stupid. She's stupid to say I'm stupid. But what is interesting, you see, often in Buddhism, we talk about emptiness. And to me, one of the thing about emptiness is words. Are empty. A word is just a sonorous wave. I'm sure if we had a scientific person, they would have the right... It's just something comes up, you have the auditory waves, sonorous wave, and then it goes. But then, you hear a word, and you grasp at it. But what are you grasping at? It's gone. But you still grasp at it. And so you might be sitting in meditation and you're relatively fine and then you remember, 2 years ago, they said this. How could they say this? It's so painful. Isn't that interesting? I had a friend, she looked a little troubled. And she said to me, well, you know, my husband, he said things which are not very friendly. And I said, really, you know? And I'm really upset. So finally, we talk. And I said, but, I mean, does he do it every day? She said, no. Every week. No, you know, now and then. And she said, then he said something about the washing, you know, the clothes washing and the washing machine. And now every time I go into the room where there is a washing machine, I get so upset because he said that. Then finally I asked, but when did he say it? And then she said, a year ago. And I thought, wait a minute, you know. Could not you have creatively engaged before? Because, you know, I mean, she does lots of washing every time, you know, being upset. So this is a thing we can grasp at a word. But creative engagement, what does it mean with words? I mean, of course, I understand that words have a different affect. If I say you are awakened to you are stupid, you feel differently. Of course. But then, the creative engagement is to ask, when I hear a word, is it about me or is it about them? To me, that's what is important. Instead of whatever I hear, it's about me. Wait a minute. Is it about me or not? Because if it's about me, maybe I can do something about it. But if it's not about me, I don't need to take it on. I can just leave it. It's empty. It's gone. And so, to me, this is one of the practice in daily life, is really about that. That is very interesting. What do I do when I hear words? So you have conversation, you have what people tell you, and then you have TV, you have radio, and to me, this grasping at words shows how influenceable we are. We can be influenced so easily. And sometimes I watch program of discussion, and then somebody said something, and you think, oh yeah, they have a point. And then the other person said the opposite, and you think, yeah, they have a point. You know? And they so convince each of their points, and you kind of, each time you kind of convince too, a little bit. And I think to really creatively engage with what is the influence of words. I mean, once I was having a lunch with a friend, and the whole lunch, she said nasty thing about a common friend. And at the beginning of the lunch, I had no problem with that common friend. And by the end of the lunch, I started to have problems with that common friend. And then I thought, wait a minute. This is not about me. This is about, you know, their interaction. And to me, this is something we have to be very careful. When there is difficulty with people and there are lots of words going around, do we help? I mean, that was one of the ideas of the Buddha, very strong idea. How can I help harmony among people? When people talk to me, how can I help harmony? And to me, this is really an important practice in daily life. Because sometimes we easily kind of, okay, I go for this one, or okay, I go for that one. But I think is, yeah, that person, but how can I help them? How can I sometimes make them listen to each other in a different way? Once I was working for a little charity, and two people kept getting into trouble. They kept kind of getting into trouble. So finally, I sat them down, actually. And they have confidence in me. And I said, okay, let's look at this. How do you feel about this? How do you feel about that? And then from a very peaceful place, they could explain how they saw the world, how they worked. And we could see they were so different. One was really in action, being efficient. The other one was into creating a nice atmosphere, but was not so efficient. But then they saw that they just had different good quality. And after that, it did not mean that they got on fantastic, but they had no trouble anymore because they understood, as this person cannot be like me. And so they kind of learn to work together. And so to me, that's part of creatively engaging, not only the word you hear, but seeing how can I help also others with that. Then you have smell. So you smell, a smell, I mean, I love when I'm in airport and you pass the perfume counter and you, and I'm allergic to perfume, so there is, I cannot do anything with it. So I kind of, it's kind of fascinating, kind of to see, and then to leave it. But one thing you can do here, because we are many of us, and there are not so many toilets. And then you go into the toilet after somebody else, and you think, and when you do your thing, you think, it's okay. And why is my smell better than somebody else? I mean, of course, there can be conditions. But it's very interesting there. I find it always very interesting going to the toilet after somebody else. What do I do with the smell? You know? Or when we walk about, the smell of spring, the smell of winter. Just kind of, how am I with the smell? Then we have taste. And taste, I mean, that's why when you eat breakfast, lunch, and light dinner, this is a great opportunity to practice. Really, just to, you taste the food, like you see something. I mean, nowadays people describe what it is, so you kind of get a certain impression. But sometimes you have no idea what you get it. You know, sometimes I am in certain places, and I think this is going to be that, and I taste it, and it's totally different than what I thought it was going to be. I always love these moments. You thought it, and it's not the same. And so, it's kind of like when we taste something, what happened? So let's say you see something and it looks good, and you're a little hungry. So okay, looks good, should taste good, so you put lots of it. And then you start to taste it. And it really doesn't taste so good. And you think, how can I get rid of it without anybody seeing me doing it? Or you eat something and immediately it's, oh, I like this. And you barely finish to chew it. You're already thinking, how am I going to get more? You can notice that with ice cream or chocolate cake. And you're already looking beyond the piece you have to possibly having more. And then it's interesting, you can have three, I mean, I don't know, me, I could not have so much chocolate cake, but you eat more and you eat more. At some point, it's not tasty anymore. And that's another thing we can do, is with chewing. You taste something and it's good, and you want more immediately, but instead you just chew. I do that with cherries. I love cherries. So I chew and chew, and it's very interesting how it changes. And as it's kind of in a way less fantastic and just ordinary, then immediately you have less the feeling, I want more. So to kind of, to look at that, the taste and how we grasp or creatively engage with the taste. But there is another thing with taste, which is interesting, and is how we can grasp at the newness of something. And that often we can also do this with meditation. Let me explain. Let's say a few months ago, last year, I went to this Japanese restaurant, and there was something which looked interesting, so I ordered it, not totally sure what it was, and it was fantastic. It really was really good. Ah, it was fantastic. Then, of course, I go there again a month later, and of course, I get the same thing. And it's okay. And there is not that, wow, this is like beyond anything. And I have had that experience again and again. I eat something after a long time, it's fantastic. I have it a week later, exactly the same thing, and it's okay. And so we have to see that often it's in comparison to not having had it. So, because we had not had it before, we have it, then you have the amplification effect straight away. But then if we have it again, it's not new anymore, and then there is not that amplification effect. And to be careful in terms of meditation, because in a way, at the beginning, before you meditated, and at the beginning you meditate, often the contrast will be greater. So you have a nice, peaceful, if you don't feel genuinely agitated, and then you sit in meditation and you feel calm, you think, this is fantastic. I mean, once I was teaching, and this fellow comes running to me and he said, Martin, I have no thought. This is fantastic. I love it. I have no agitated thought. I feel so good. This must last forever. And this is the one thing I could not guarantee. But it's possible that he could have a similar experience later on, but it would not be so amazing. Because he had it before, also because he meditate more, is less agitated, there is less contrast. So I think it's important to kind of also be a little bit aware of that. Then you have sensation. And so we experience sensations, and often we experience unpleasant sensation. And with unpleasant sensation, we can so easily, I'm not saying they're not unpleasant, but we can so easily upon contact, amplify very fast. That's what the person was talking about this afternoon. And I remember just a few years back, suddenly I had lots of pain. But really lots of pain. And I was driving and I could barely drive because suddenly I had so much pain. I felt that the pain was outside of my body. It was so painful. And so I kind of come back home and I kind of feel, you know, is this like, you know, am I at death's door? I'm a little exaggerating. And then I think, wait a minute. So I move from grasping to creative engagement. And I think, wait a minute. It feels like the pain is everywhere, but where is it actually? So I look at the head, and it's okay. The neck, the shoulder, it's okay. The feet, the leg, it's okay. And then from being there, the pain was where often I can have pain, which is here in my pelvic area. And then immediately I could creatively engage with it. So in a way, with sensation, to see that we can, like those a day I was teaching in meditation at Gaia House, and there was a sun. I was sitting there and the sun was coming on me. And so, before the sun came, I was fine. Then the sun came on me and it was really nice and warm. So I was like bathing in the warmth. And then the sun go, and then actually I feel colder than before. But I am back to the first temperature. And so to see, often that's what happened. So in a way to kind of also be aware of that, the change. Then you have visual object. So you see something, and very quickly, you have the contact with the visual object. I like this, I want it. Or you have the opposite, I don't like it, I don't want it, and you want to push it away. And I'm not saying that, you know, you should not do something with it. But just to see what happens, how am I amplifying, how am I exaggerating? So looking at that, when we, I mean, a very good exercise is looking in the shop window. And looking at, you know, like a shop window, you really kind of the kind of thing you like and what happens. And looking at the shop window of things you're really not interested in. Or looking at a shop window where you have something you're not keen on. I mean, I have, in my room, there was this, carpet. I took it away. I'll put it back when I leave. But when I entered the room, there was this skin of a cow as a carpet. It's an IKEA carpet. I turned. And I thought, okay, I can live with it. And I thought, I can't live with this. So I kind of fold it, I put it under the bed so I cannot see it. So it doesn't mean you cannot do something. You know, when you see something which is kind of a little unpleasant, as an unpleasant association. But it's kind of just to notice that to me that this, it's not that we should never grasp, it's not about that. Because I think we'll have to grasp anyway. I think it's part of our survival mechanism. But do we grasp 95%? 70%? Or do we grasp 50%? To me, that's what we're trying to do. We're not trying to go to 0%. But we're trying to see, can I diminish the grasping, the identifying, and then you can have more creative engagement. And with visual thing, there is this wonderful story with Ajahn Chah, who was a great Theravada monk, and he had this table, and there was this beautiful glass. And so once a Westerner came and said to him, but you are a renunciate monk, an ascetic monk, why have you got this beautiful glass? You should not have beautiful thing. And then Ajahn Chah said, it's beautiful, I can appreciate it, it's beautiful, I can use it, but I know when I use it that it's already broken. So he knew, like he could still appreciate it, use it, but he knew that at some point it could break, it could disappear. And so he was not grasping at it or identifying with it, but it doesn't mean he could not use it or appreciate it. Then there is another thing with the visual object. Is, I think it's fair enough if we grasp at something that is here. That I think, why not? But sometimes we grasp at something that is not here. And that I think is very interesting. Like when I moved from, I lived in England for a long time, then I moved to live in France, and then we created a little meditation room, and then we needed a little staircase to just go up, about 4 steps to go up to the meditation room. And so I had this image in my mind of this beautiful, wooden, elegant little staircase. And then I could not get somebody to come, and we still needed, so we got a very ordinary staircase. Not so pleasant. Weird steps. And then every time I went to meditate, I would feel, oh. So it happened a few times. Then I thought, what is happening? And I realized that as I was going up the steps, I would see 2 staircases. There was the one I was using, and there was a imaginary world, which was so amazing. And often that's what we do. We go about our life and we cannot appreciate what there is because we compare it to what doesn't exist. I'm not saying it cannot exist, but to see if we do that. And I think sometimes we might do that even with meditation. And so sometimes we sit in meditation, and so you are about 40, 43 people here, and actually there are 86 people in this room. you have the meditator here and now, and next there is the imaginary meditator. That one has no thought, that one has no pain, and that one also floats a little above the cushion. And so compared to that meditator, you are not so good. But he does not exist. He or she does not exist. There is only the meditator here and now, who he or she is doing the best he or she can with the condition. And so I think to be a little careful here, to see, can I creatively engage with what is here and not grasp and compare. I mean, it's not like you can hope for something. Actually, now I have a beautiful staircase. I did get it in the end. So it doesn't mean you cannot get it. But I think it's important to, the problem is a comparing and then putting down what is here. Doesn't mean that you cannot hope, of course, for better things. And then the last one, and this is, I think, an important one to look at, is contact with thought. I know thoughts, what are thoughts? Thoughts are just a little bit of electricity in the brain. That's all they are. They're just little synapses doing a little electricity. That's what they are. So at one level, same with the thought and with the sound, they're not very solid and everything. And at the same time, they can be so solid. And so what is interesting with the meditation over time is to start to feel the first contact with what I call certain trigger thought. Because you can see that before the contact, you were okay. And then you have that trigger thought. And that trigger thought, you generally grasp, identify, and then off you go. I mean, I had trouble with daydreaming when I used to do a meditation before. And then, slowly over time, I started to see the contact. And I started to see that what got me with the grasping was that when suddenly there was this, if I was, if I had, there was this amazing, gooey, nice feeling. It was like there was this contact. One moment I did not have it, next moment there was this, wow. It's like, it was so pleasant. I had to go with it. And then you have thought, which are opposite. You might suddenly have a thought and it's like the thought is so unpleasant, is so painful. So that, but although it's so painful, you still, in a way, grasp at it. But in a negative way, and then it amplifies. And so I think that's when the meditation can be very useful over time, is to see, what is the first thought? Is it an image? Is it like this, taste? Is it a word which trigger me? Because some words, it's very important to see that most of the time thought is made of language. And the language of our thought has a certain resonance. It kind of can be triggering. And so there are some words which really gets us. And to see that. I mean, when I was, before it was the word unfair. This is unfair. No, and I would say to my husband, this is unfair. About whatever, and he would say, is the world the fair place? It doesn't mean I don't want to do something about making it more balanced and fair, but to see the reaction to it, the grasping. Other people might have other words which they don't respect me, they don't see me. That can be a big triggering one. So anyway, it doesn't mean that we cannot address creatively the situation, but to see that if I grasp at the thought, then I'm going to amplify. And so I think it's kind of like when we have thought in meditation, to me that's part of the practice. It's what kind of thought? What is the shape of the thought? And what is my contact with that thought? Is it a thought which have no triggering effect? It just comes, no trigger at all. Or is it a thought which there is this triggering effect? And so that's why, in terms of this contact, when we are in daily life, things go very fast. And so generally we see it a little later. Generally often we see it once we have amplified. Oops, I am caught. But sometimes I think it's useful, not all the time. Time to time it's useful to come back to what was the contact? What happened? Once I was on a retreat, and you know, we're all supposed to be in silence and everything. And then I saw the manager talking with somebody, and you know, blah, blah, and I thought, oh, what's going on here? They shouldn't be, you know, speaking, blah, 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 blah. And it was just that contact of seeing the two of them speaking. And then the manager talked to me and said, oh, that person had great difficulty and we need to do this, we need to do that. And then it was a very different contact because I understood it very differently. And so it went by thinking, oh, this is not good. But just the contact. You have a contact, you hear something, and generally we interpret and generally we grasp. And so in a way it's very hard for us not to grasp. I think it goes very fast. But as we are on retreat, I think without making it complicated, because this is not about judging. I must be creatively engaged. I must not grasp. This is not what it's about. But to see what is the process of grasping, how I experience it, and what are the conditions which help me to creatively engage? I think here that's what we're looking at. What happened when I grasp, and what are the conditions where I can creatively engage? And to me, this is in a way what we are cultivating when we're doing meditation. We're trying to shift from this quick grasping to this creative engagement. So, my time is up. So are there any questions?
Is the word amplify to strengthen? Is it the same?
Then I would call it negative strengthening in a way. Mm-hmm. Because amplifying I see as making the thing bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah. So it could be strengthening it, but in a negative way. Yeah. Because generally when you talk of strengthening, In English, generally, it has more like a positive quality. Amplify can go both ways.